Hello and welcome to Geek Space Nine, the discovery and possible rediscovery of Star Trek's Deep Space Nine. With me today, as always, is Sarah.
Hello, everyone.
And Peter.
Hi, guys. What's up?
And I am Ben, and today we watched Season 1, Episode 5, and Season 1, Episode 6. That would be Babel and Captive Pursuit. The first up is Babel, which gives us a sort of classic Trek thing, which is a very weird disease outbreak. Causes weird things to happen. Sort of an interesting one. This disease causes... first we start with, I think, probably something that every IT person can relate to, which is Chief O'Brien being thrown between every single person and never making any of them happy. I think I know a lot of people, friends in IT, and I was like, this is what their life is basically like. Just yeah. The one guy who's basically making the entire ship run.
Bless his heart. He
has no sleep whatsoever. But if O'Brien's overworked trouble isn't enough, he contracts a disease, which causes him to have aphasia, which for those who aren't neurologic nerds, means that your brain basically gets... switched around, and you're no longer able to basically connect the right word with the right object. So you see a window, and you might say banana. You might see a tree, and you might call it a dog. And so your brain still works, but you're no longer able to communicate properly that section of your brain. So it's sort of an interesting idea, because as everyone's trying, eventually the whole ship gets infected, everyone's trying to do their best to keep going, but they all know there's sort of this ticking clock, and there's sort of an interesting way and a nice sort of pace to it, where a character will suddenly start saying Babel to Gook, and you're like, ah, damn, now they're out of the picture. Now we're only left with these characters who can solve it. So what'd you guys think of this episode?
Well, as a psych nerd, I really enjoyed it. I think it's always interesting when we deal with sort of neurological difficulties. Because it's like this, it's interesting because this kind of thing does happen to people in real life. And granted, it's not particularly common, but it sort of, you know, gives us an opportunity to explore the question of what would happen if a whole bunch of people experienced this thing at the same time. And it's very scary when the ability to communicate has been lost. That creates so many problems that we just don't think about too much in our society.
Well, yeah, one thing I really liked is they had a nice little touch when Julian Bashir gets it.
Yes.
He's looking at a readout, and they actually changed the readout, and there's a nice little pause moment where you see it's all nonsense words, too. Real words, but obviously in an order that makes no sense to a common rational thinking person. And that was nice. It was a nice touch to get sort of in that mindset of that's what it feels like, you know, that your brain is working, but you know everything around you is wrong and you can't communicate, which is terrifying. I mean, I think that trapped in syndrome is something that scares me. There's a great film called a different mental disorder, but there's a film called The Diamond Bell and the Butterfly, where basically a person is completely mentally sound but cannot move any of his arms or legs. And that's terrifying to me. So I think any sort of thing where you're trapped inside your brain and you can still make memories and cognitive thought but can't express them in any way is horrifying. So this episode kind of triggered a lot of scariness in me. But it's more of a personal thing. I don't know if that happened to either of you guys.
And one more quick nerdy psych thing. The part of the brain that is affected when aphasia occurs is called Broca's area. And basically, if something bad happens to that part of your brain, what happened in this episode is exactly what happens to you, is, the aphasia problem. And I'm just, you know, quietly bitter about the fact that they didn't bother to mention Broca's area anywhere in this episode. Thank you, Dr. Bashir, or not. But that's just a nerd thing. Everything else seemed to be correct to me.
Right. It seemed like they did a decent amount of research, which is always what's nice about Star Trek. It wasn't just a made-up neurological thing. They had the actual proper name for it, and they discussed real ways it happens, like strokes and concussions and the like. So
exactly.
It was nice to see that element, but you're right. It's not as You gotta give some things a pass, but I understand when you're a nerd about these things. Like, yeah.
I minored in psychology, so these things are
that's right. I forgot about that.
To me,
I totally understand. Did you enjoy this episode, Peter?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I liked watching like the especially when it really became like a race against time. When it became apparent, it's like, okay, because of the nature of this aphasia, because of it being synthetic, people will start dying if we don't figure out this problem. And so kind of the calculated risks that people start, or even at, to a degree uncalculated, that people started taking in order to solve this problem and find a cure to save essentially the entire station.
Yeah, one thing I really liked is, as a nerd about these things, I like fascinated by disease. I appreciate the proper quarantine procedures that were mm-hmm. involved. I appreciated seeing Sisko being so on point once again on this episode. The first sign of any sort of infection, so lock it down, lock everything down.
Though he did really make a fatal mistake when he went to go see his son the second time and he gave him a kiss on the forehead. I was just like, nope, transference of
oh, he was already airborne by that point. He already knew he was infected.
That's true, but still I was like, don't make contact. That makes it even worse. now you're just not caring. I mean, and I understood. It's like you want to be there for your son and like showing that affection, but I was like, come on.
Don't go near him.
Please.
I really enjoyed that our last two people on the ship with that it were Odo and Quark, of all people.
Our favorite frenemies.
Favorite frenemies. We get a very nice thing where they have to save the ship together. And
that guy who tried to escape, too.
That guy who tried to escape, have either of you guys seen The Big Lebowski?
Once in college, and I did like it, but I haven't had the chance to watch it again.
Anyone who's familiar with The Big Lebowski will recognize him. He's the dude's landlord who puts on a very awkward avant-garde show that the dude has to go to. So that's the guy who played the captain who just wanted to get away and looked very sad. His makeup made him look like he had very sad eyes the entire time.
He did
just
look
wanted
sad.
To go deliver his stuff.
Like on the verge of tears, like, can you please just let me go? Please, just let me go.
I really enjoyed Quark's razzing of Odo, especially the moment where he's like, oh, I worked on a freighter for years. I could do these teletransporter. And right when Odo's about to go in, like, I've seen it done a bunch of times. What?
It's like,
that's not the same.
Energize. We got to witness Odo's transformation abilities again. He was a trolley in this episode.
He was a trolley this episode. Yes, I've been keeping a runny tally. Now we're up to a trolley. That's a new one. Does he have to think about making the wheels spin? I was thinking that later on.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. But like, okay, make my wheel spin and make sure it's... When you overthink Odo, maybe it falls apart.
Maybe.
He just kind of goes for it, just throws himself at it, and it's like, okay, cool. Well, we're going to try this now.
Yep.
I like that the idea that it was a failed plot from years and years ago. I thought that was kind of a neat twist on it, that it wasn't just... I mean, I guess it also gives it an out, so they can go find the guy who was involved with it and fix the problem in the time limit. But it was also nice that it was a clever idea, I thought, to make it this failed plot from years and years ago that just sort of happened to decay eventually enough, and now it's just now getting out, and everybody involved with it is dead. Like it puts it in a really interesting spot, I thought.
Yeah, it gave it more of a purpose than just your sort of standard random space bug that happened a lot on other Star Trek shows. It's like, no, well, I mean, it sucks that it's here, but it was here for a reason at one time.
Right, and like the scars of the Bajoran resistance / revolt are still there.
Exactly.
I think it's very interesting.
Like a dormant volcano.
Exactly, it's sort of a good like metaphor of where they're at right now. It's like, oh, it's not over. As much as we think it's over, these scars are going to keep opening up over and over again for a while, even intentionally or unintentionally, like this time. And yeah, it was just an interesting little episode, I thought. Did you enjoy Kira's kidnapping?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Though I found it...
Go ahead, Peter.
No, I was just going to say, like, I found it interesting that, I mean, and I'm guessing this is something that that has been done in, like, past shows or even shows that came afterwards. I don't know, but I found it interesting that Kira, while on her little ship, was able to be like, computer, focus on this life form. We're gonna just beam him aboard against his will. Do it.
Yeah, probably breaking several laws in the process.
So many.
Yeah, it's sort of it's like the line about how locks only keep out honest people. I guess the same thing is true for transporters. They only work if everyone agrees to not transport people willy-nilly. We need better transport security is what I'm saying. We need to build a wall around Bajor. Bad transporters. Sorry, too easy. I enjoyed this episode. This is, like I said, maybe a little bit more of a classic one, but it was nice to see Quark and Odo sort of move on and a little bit more into the scars of Bajor still existing around and coming back to haunt everyone.
No real side plots in this episode, though, which is interesting. Usually there's at least one other thing going on besides the main storyline in a Star Trek episode, and we didn't get one of those this time, which I thought was interesting.
I mean, yeah. I guess though, when you have like a confirmed 60% or whatever it was of the entire station infected, which then eventually turns into all when it becomes airborne, it's like there's really not much room for a side plot when
very true
when everyone's life is literally in danger.
Right.
Because if there was a side plot, if there was a side plot, I'm pretty sure, like with like us discussing it now, we'd be saying that was rather odd for them to have this when it's like everyone's dying, guys. There are more important things to focus on.
We also got the Odo line of the season, I think, so far.
He's an idiot.
Sarah pointed out. How'd you know? Because Nom's an idiot.
Yes.
Odo's tolerance for bullshit is so low. I love it.
It was another demonstration of Odo being like a very straightforward guy. He's like, I'm not going to beat around the bush for this.
I don't have so you time do to wonder at what point Quark gets away with stuff. It's like, didn't he infect the entire ship by breaking protocol? Like, I think at some point there'd be repercussions, but I guess he saved the day at the end, so you gotta give him a pass.
Side note, this doesn't really have very much to do with the episode or the plot of it, rather, but I'm looking at the Memory Alpha page for this episode right now, and there's just a still of Avery Brooks looking rather surprised, and the caption underneath it must be just, you know, like a quote from the show, but it's clearly after he's developed the aphasic reaction, and it just says, Bread, the arrive, seen earlier.
Yeah.
It took me a second. It's like, what the hell does that mean? He's like, oh, right. The aphasia.
Yeah. That's one thing I liked is that, I forget which character it was. Maybe it was Jake or something. Like, you could kind of tell kind of what they were saying because they were saying the same word over and over again. So I like that element of it, that it wasn't just nonsense. They were sort of saying, like, cheese, Britain. Like, you know, they were trying to say, like, one specific thing. You could tell there was a structure to their thought, which I thought was cool. Like, that was a neat little trick that's not just gobbledygook on
like
the page.
Even with their infection, they were still trying to work it out for someone who, like, an unaffected person to understand.
Right. So you gotta love Quark still trying to get money from someone who can't communicate.
You, me, oh, money.
Money, gold, me.
Yeah. He's like, I'm just trying to make sure that they're not faking it. It's like, Quark, come on.
Oh, Quark. So we got anything else to say about Babel?
No, I'm just curious, like, if Quark is ever going to get around to teaching Odo that game, about gambling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that was, like, a minor subplot. Like I guess
we got like an Odo
kind of a foreshadowing to how it was going to be the frenemies of DS9 coming together to like to like help save like a good chunk of the ship from
right.
a potential exploding other ship.
Definitely, and I like this line. You don't know how to play? No wonder you're so bored.
Yeah.
All right, so next up on our list is really, I thought a really excellent episode. It's probably my favorite so far.
Yes, agreed.
Captive Pursuit. And this episode is sort of an O'Brien solo episode in a sense. We get our first visitor from the Gamma Quadrant coming through the other side of the wormhole. Seems to be sort of a weird alien, hard to understand, named Tosk. He also seems to be he says his name is Tosk, his purpose is Tosk, his species is Tosk. So it's not clear. Eventually, though, we learn that Tosk is actually a creature, very clever, sort of interesting twist. It's a creature designed by a group called the Hunters. Basically, it's the ultimate prey. He's an intelligent creature who never needs to sleep and can store food, I guess, in his body. So I guess he can go for weeks on end without food, assuming, too. And he basically can turn himself invisible, the ultimate prey, and he sort of loves being prey. And it'd be a sort of interesting clash where obviously we as humans find this kind of gross and horrible, but he as a creature bred solely for this purpose finds it the most honorable thing to do, to be prey.
Yeah, he's proud of it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, what did we think of this very unique sort of episode?
I really enjoyed it. I like episodes where the sort of, where the prime directive, I mean, doesn't come into question is not the right way of putting it, but, well, I mean, maybe I guess it is, because obviously to Star Trek age humans, this whole idea is really quite barbaric. The idea that an entire race exists just to be hunted and preyed upon and stuff is, you know, really quite horrible. But at the same time, it's, you know, not their species, not their planet, so therefore not really their business. So what do you do in that kind of situation? I always think that's a really interesting topic to discuss in an episode.
Right, because when you stretch that prime directive past your own moral compass, that's often where some of the great episodes are. Like, there's a great TNG episode, which is a different sort of thing, but where they're at a planet that they realize is going to erupt and everyone on the planet is going to die. And they have to decide, well, do we just let everyone die? Because, like, they're part of the prime directive and it's the natural course of this planet for everyone to die, but we just happen to be here right before they go.
Right.
And there's that moral quandary where the prime directive is supposed to be beyond even regular morality, which is what makes this one very interesting, where it's a different culture's reality and morality matching with your own, and a sort of an interesting way of looking at it. I think a comparison for me is like how we treat sort of chickens. I know it's a weird thing to say, and we don't honor chickens like they honor Tosk, I guess, but we've bred chickens to a point where they couldn't survive in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like we've created them, and we have to at least honor them as food, in my opinion, or re-engineer them if we ever really stop eating them as food. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
the Tosks were born and bred for this sole purpose. To eliminate from them would make them a much more sad life than letting them be free, in a sense. Peter, what do you think of this episode?
No, I'm with Sarah. I definitely enjoyed it, and I think I said it earlier. Like this might end up being one of my favorite episodes from the first season, just because I think what intrigued me most is that it was really cool to see particularly the interaction between Tosk and O'Brien, which is kind of what led the entire the whole episode. With O'Brien knowing that this race that came through the wormhole, like the Hunters, after Tosk, knowing their purpose for being there, but also knowing the repercussions of whatever his actions were, when he decided, I'm going to help him. I'm going to help Tosk escape through a technical loophole that I am creating for the situation because I don't agree. It was really cool to see that develop, and how he was justifying it, saying like, well, you know, like, well, the hunt to them and to you is like the best thing ever. I'm just making it more interesting to them by extending it, but also saving you for at least another day.
Right. I like the idea of changing the game, as O'Brien said. It was sort of interesting that he kind of picked the best option for everybody, and it was nice also to see the ending, which I really appreciate, which Sisko obviously can't let this slide, but he has a nice little wink moment with him, which is excellent. He's like, well, he could have stopped us at any time. He's like, well, I guess that got by us.
Right. Yeah.
And just sort of a look. I can't ever acknowledge that because that would be horribly fucked up. Like, you know, we'd all be screwed on this one, Miles. So, you know, take your punishment and understand why you're not fired, essentially.
Yeah, it was it was a shared understanding between the two.
Exactly. It was a very clever and smart way to do it. Another clever thing I really liked was this is a good writing thing where when he last sees Toss says, "Die with honor, Miles O'Brien." And it's one of those things, like, oh, that's such a weird thing to say, like, as a human being. But, you know, he doesn't have to explain it. He understands right away the way he says it. This is, like, the best thing you could ever say as a task to someone. Like,
yes.
Yeah,
this is meaningful. And so he gives it just right back to him. I was like, that's so wonderful and classy and simple and perfect.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, Tosk whole, or at least part of Tosk's reason for being was to either live another day to be hunted or to die honorably at least before he was captured, and so knowing that for Tosk that was kind of the pinnacle of his existence to have him say that to O'Brien who had essentially become his friend, you have to imagine, even for just Tosk himself, for Tosk himself, like how much that meant to him to say that to another person. That's not something that Tosk would I imagine that's not something that he would say lightly, put lightly.
Right, because part of their thing is that what I understood is that they're not allowed to tell their situation to anybody.
Right,
it's like part of the code of silence. It's like it's sort of dishonorable to explain what you are. If you cannot seek help from other races, so. To admit to O'Brien that he appreciated his help is definitely something very powerful.
For sure.
Him. You know, he's probably never, like, talked to another non-Tosk, probably. Or anyone else, probably, for that matter. I mean, his whole life. Like, and that's what I think helped with this, like, childlike fear and sort of questioning and concern, you know, the whole time. It's a clever way of doing it. You know, you start out going, oh, okay, is he on the run? Is he a criminal? And it's... You rewatch the episode and you don't think, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Like, his motivation is also very clear. What do you think of Cole Meany's performance in this episode? He kind of gets this... He's always been sort of a background character in TNG. Never, as far as I know, got too many main episodes. This sort of feels like the first main episode he's kind of really gotten. What do you think of his role against Tosk?
Yeah, I thought he did very well. I was quite impressed with him. As you say, we don't really get the chance to see him as a main character in Next Gen, which is what the three of us probably know him the best from.
Yeah.
But he really got to shine in this episode, and he did a great job. We all, you know, felt sympathy for him when he was trying to solve this dilemma of do I honor the Prime Directive or do I save my new friend, and... We all got to cheer him on when he came up with that loophole to get Tosk out of it. And I don't know. I'm very proud of Colm Meany for this episode.
I agree. Sarah basically said what I was going to say. So my answer to that is yes.
Yes. I really like the makeup on Tosk.
I do too. That was very well done.
And the hunters too.
No, they were excellent as well. The guy who did it, Michael Westmore, won an Emmy for this episode, which I'm glad to see. I think it was well deserved. And if you've ever watched Face Off,
yes,
I highly recommend. Yes,
love that show.
Westmore is the guy, the older gentleman, who's the father of the host, who you know, gives everyone advice. Yeah, he's awesome.
He does good shit. Face
Off. He's pretty much a genius. So I'm glad he's involved with this show because man, this is really, really impressive makeup for something you know has a lot less budget than, say, Star Trek Beyond, obviously. Not to slag on Star Trek Beyond, it looks gorgeous.
And also like, using makeup techniques from, what, 13 years ago?
Right.
I was impressed that it didn't seem to be much like wrinklage in his suit, you know what I mean? Like, it's something you often see in, like, those rubber masks. And they showed a lot of his, like, body and everything, too. It's, mm-hmm. Man, it's a lot of work. And it takes a lot. I also got to give Scott McDonald, who played Toss, credit, because it takes a lot to express yourself through that character. I feel like it's a very different kind of character,
mm-hmm.
especially when we were behind all that makeup. And I thought he did very well.
No, yeah. Speaking of the makeup, like and how much we were impressed by Tosk and the Hunters, that like with some of the, and then also speaking of and also mentioning Star Trek Beyond, with some of the images that we've seen for Beyond over the past couple of months, Krall, the movie's villain played by Idris Elba, of course, but then also some other pictures, like, and knowing the history that Star Trek has had with alien races, where it's not just going to be like, oh, make their skin green or make their skin pink, but where it's going to be like actually applying stuff, like it makes me excited to see. To see what kind of other stuff, what kind of other stuff we get in Beyond, like what other created aliens and makeup will we have in this film?
Yeah, I guess I'm curious about that. Do you guys feel like with Star Trek, this and the new series, should they go back to old characters? I mean, that's one thing I think is interesting about Deep Space Nine is our major plot is on characters we know, like Bajorans, Cardassians, and Ferengis. But we're also seeing a lot of new creatures. So in this new series and these new shows, would you like to see more of the newer creations, or do you want to go back to some of those old ones?
I like it when they do a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, I always love seeing new creatures, you know, seeing new alien worlds that are created and, you know, getting new things to sort of, like, fantasize about, like, oh, well, this alien culture is really interesting. Let's learn more about that. For example, in Into Darkness, where they started off another Prime Directive issue where they decided to stop that volcano from destroying that colony of, of aliens, essentially. Mm-hmm. I love that. I thought that was great. I love seeing new places that don't even exist in real life, but you know, some very clever person has come up with, a fantasy world, and it's great. It's always great to see new things. But at the same time, having grown up watching Next Generation, I just get geeky and fangirl when I see stuff that they brought back before. Like, as much as I hate the fact that they whitewashed Khan with Benedict Cumberbatch, he did a fantastic job, and as you know, when he said, "My name is Khan," I just started, like, jumping up and down in my chair. I was like, this is so cool. I love that they brought Khan back. This is great.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. Problematic as it can be, I really do like it when they bring back old stuff.
Yeah. As long as it's, I think, narratively interesting or creatively done. I mean,
sure.
Like, the Klingons weren't maybe necessary, but it was also just nice to see, like, oh, like, that's what you can make a Klingon look like with a really good budget. Like,
right.
It was really cool to see.
It makes me excited to see, like, going forward with whatever subsequent films they make, or even the reboot of the TV show that's going to be on CBS All Access next year. If they're going to do more with the Klingons, how are they going to further present them to the new generation of Star Trek fans and then also those who were fans of the series before, how are they going to do that?
Right, and I'm very curious. We'll probably have to do a podcast on the new show, because very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first show that I'm actually can watch in real time, and so I think for a lot of us who were just a little, I was a little too young to watch this show when it was actually airing. So
me too.
And appreciate it.
The only thing that's going to suck about it though is that because it is on CBS All Access, their online platform CBS All Access is it has a monthly subscription similar to like Netflix and Hulu Prime or whatever. So I mean like that like at least for me like that's like the main unfortunate thing about it. I mean I don't think it's expensive by any means, but it's just like, I'll have to pay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's, they did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They're like, this Star Trek show is going to pull in a bunch of nerds. You got to make sure they pay for the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They know us. They know us too well.
That they do.
But it's a different time, because this show, I was just saying, this episode was watched by 12 million people. It's like, that's crazy.
Wow.
Those numbers are so insane. Like, that was a low show back in the day. This was a cult show. Like, and now it's making numbers like Walking Dead money numbers, you know?
Yeah.
The landscape has changed completely. Now we're in, like, can you imagine even, like, 5 years ago saying, we're going to premiere our new Star Trek show on the internet? And I'd be like, ugh.
No, I could not imagine that. If I heard that, I would. My first question would be, like, is this fan-made? Like, that would be...
Right.
Right.
That would be series. Does this have $10 budget each episode?
Are we gonna see a boom mic dip into the shot accidentally?
Exactly. It's crazy to me that Star Trek can premiere on the internet now, and that's like an okay thing. It's actually probably a better thing in some respects.
I would agree. Kind of similar to when Nickelodeon took Legend of Korra off primetime. On their channel, and then put the rest of the episodes online. It's like, yep, this was probably a better thing for this show with the direction that it's going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whole show. Don't get me started.
So good.
That show's great, and Nickelodeon bummed it all up.
Yeah.
That's their history with Avatar.
It really is. Why? Why? Just because it's not SpongeBob? Why?
I think my own personal hell involves a constant loop of SpongeBob's laugh.
Oh God! Now I'm going to be thinking about that for the next hour. Thank you so much, Peter.
Yeah, that's basically how I imagine hell. Is, you know, other terrible stuff can be happening, but that's all I can hear is that laugh.
That's actually pretty scary. I'll have to give that one to you.
Well, one thing before we head out is we're five episodes in, so now it's time to discuss the nerdier aspects. And we'll start with the bridge, sort of a...
Oh, that's right.
Bridge, I guess they call it Command Ops instead of bridge, which makes sense. What do we think of it? It's sort of more angular, got a lot of levels. Kind of reminds me of the Battlestar Galactica.
I was going to say that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instead of everyone on like two planes, you got like people on all kinds of planes. We got interesting shooting locations,
mm-hmm.
and we get our first turbo lift that actually moves.
Right.
Because that's not really turbo.
I mean, it's
it goes very slow.
Oh, but it's like, a lift. Whatever.
Just a lift, not turbo.
We get our first lift that moves.
we finally get a fully visual representation of this thing is actually moving.
Right. Instead of the colored lights in the background.
Right.
Works well for the years, but we gotta mm-hmm. change some things. So what do you guys think of the Command Ops design?
I mean, I think it works well for the show because, you know, part of the reason they wouldn't call it a bridge is because it's not on a spaceship. It's on a space station. And so it, just out of necessity, it's going to need to be shaped a little bit differently. And I think the way they designed it does work quite well for that purpose.
And I mean, it's on a space station, so it's not going to serve... The same purposes. So with having those different levels and having that big kind of computer table like DS9's version of Windows Surface, essentially. I agree. Like it works for the show and it works for the setting. Like to have a bridge wouldn't make sense.
Right, I agree. It's nice also that it seems more of a 360 set.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's not as sort of three walls as of TNG was. Like, you can kind of tell more in that show that it's very clearly like three camera setup, so we can go faster at shooting these things. But this one kind of has more of a energy to it and kind of a nice design. The only thing is, like, why does it take till the Abrams one to have windows? Why is it all? I get the view screen's awesome, but like, why not windows? Hmm. What's wrong with windows, man? Just have some windows. They need just a few windows. That's all I'm saying.
Because windows is because windows would take away from the structural integrity.
I don't know. Not with transparent aluminum. We had windows on the Enterprise with transparent aluminum. We can have windows. It's okay.
But we saw that window almost break in 2009 Star Trek when they almost went through that black hole. So like, do we really want that? I don't know.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Maybe they shouldn't build the 2001 night out of glass. That's their problem today. All right, so I think that's it for Babel and Captive Pursuit. So next time we'll be discussing Q-less, obviously from the title, and the certain characters coming back.
Yay. I'm very excited for that one.
Yes, we all love
Q. And Dax, which I'm assuming will be a whole episode about Odo. Obviously. So.
No, it's clearly going to be about Jake.
It's clearly going to be about Jake. It'll be a Jake only episode, obviously. So, yes, I guess we'll learn a little bit more about where Q's at and where Dax's life is at. So, we will discuss those next time on Geek Space 9. In the meantime, please like and review us on iTunes. I'm going to start doing that spiel, but it means a lot. There's we're not the only Star Trek podcast out there, obviously, and. Obviously, the more you rate and review us, the more we appreciate it, the more it helps good people find us and meet our fellow nerds out there who want to hear about people talk about Deep Space Nine. Just can never get enough. So, we love you people, and we'd love to hear from you. So please like and rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on any podcatcher of your choice. And be sure in the coming weeks we'll talk about our sort of overall website and be on the lookout for that. We'll talk more about that when it's ready. So, yes, we'll talk to you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. See you later.
Bye.